Hey, I'm Ben Stiller.
I'm Adam Scott.
And we make a TV show called Severance. On January 17th, Severance is back for season 2 on Apple TV+, and we can't wait for you guys to see it.
And before the premiere, Ben and I are going to be binging season 1 and putting out daily recap podcasts.
Yep. Each weekday beginning January 7th, we'll be dropping an episode featuring exclusive behind-the-scenes tidbits and brilliant insights from our cast and crew and us.
Patricia Arquette, Britt Lauer, Zach Cherry, John Turturro, the list goes on.
All your favorite Lumen employees, their friends, families, enemies, in your feed every single weekday.
And here's the best part. After that, we're going to keep going. Tune in weekly as we recap every episode of season 2. The podcast drops on the same day the episode comes out.
It's the Severance Podcast with Ben and Adam.
On Apple Podcasts, the Odyssey app, or wherever you get your podcasts.
That'll wake you up on a now Tuesday morning. I cannot believe how quickly we have catapulted into February, and now we're days away from the Super Bowl, last football game until August. Well, that would be college football. But in addition, how is it February 4th, the morning of February 4th? Wowzers. It's a football world, and we're just living in it, right? It's After Hours with Amy Lawrence. Good morning to you. Hope that you kicked your manic Monday in the rear end. I know in New Orleans, it's, of course, the opening night, primetime, Super Bowl opening night. It's a brand new, well, relatively brand new thing that the NFL has done to milk even more coverage out of Super Bowl week. They've turned it into almost like an all-star affair where there's introductions and there's the grand entrance by each team. They've got lights and they've got music and they've got an MC and all that kind of stuff. So good for these guys getting their moment in the sun. But then when you see the perspective of the photos, the sea of photographers and camera crews that are surrounding the podium where Patrick Mahomes is holding court, it's crazy. I've been to some of those. The times that I was there on Radio Row and covering these types of events, most of it was around Tom Brady. And you're talking about, oh gosh, 25, 30 people deep. In some cases, they even have to hold his press conferences in theater type rooms because otherwise there wouldn't be enough space for everyone who wanted to hear from him. This is another distraction for these teams. This is where experience comes in and really helps. If you've not been in this situation before, it's time that coaches would tell you takes away from prep. It really does. But also, and we'll hear part of our conversation with Ron Rivera again in 15 minutes here on the show, 15-ish minutes here on the show. But because he went through it as a player, not nearly the spectacle that it is now. He played in the 80s with the Chicago Bears, but also went in this century as a coordinator with the Bears and then again as the head coach of the Panthers. He said, it's crazy how big this has become. And if you're not prepared for it, it's really daunting. All of the demands on your time, all of the people who reach out to you, the distractions that are there. So it does help to understand what's coming, or at the very least, it helps to have teammates who've been there before. And that certainly is the case for both the Chiefs and the Eagles. I thought it was interesting, too, how Jalen Hurts mentioned the fact that they are telling their other teammates, this is what you have to be ready for when we land in New Orleans.
You approach it obviously trying to put forth a good effort, trying to improve and everything, assess it for what it is, but also knowing that every team is different. And so it's just been a process that I've taken a day at a time, and I've always just had the mentality of trying to get better every day.
Oh, that's not quite the cut that I thought it was. All right, reset, take two. But that's important too. Preparation for the Super Bowl is really the most important thing. We'll hear more from opening night coming up on the back half of the hour. When I'm more prepared, just kidding. I actually am prepared and I thought it was something different. Okay, there goes the perfect show. We got 3+ hours into it. Crash and burn. At least I'm not Nico Harrison. There, see, pivot. Redirect in, not just redirect, but man, what's that word where you deflect? You deflect on to someone else, because Nico Harrison is still persona non grata, not just in Dallas, but in sports. Okay. It's After Hours with Amy Lawrence. Excited to walk through this Super Bowl week with all of the fanfare, even here in our studios. Roger Goodell holding his state of the state address, his press conference, where he makes his initial comments, but then he takes questions from the horde of reporters there as well on Monday. And I thought it was interesting, two of the questions that were posed that got a lot of traction. One, about Tom Brady's potential broadcasting conflict as a minority owner with the Raiders, who's very much involved. But two, about whether or not the officials are showing favoritism to the Kansas City Chiefs.
Well, this sort of reminds me a little bit of the script, right? That I write a script, and I have the script for the entire season. Listen, I think from a lot of those theories are things that happen in social media, and they get a new life. As you say, it's not your theory, but it's out there. Nobody wants it to be their theory. And so I understand that. I think it reflects a lot of the fans' passion. And I think it also is a reminder for us how important officiating is. And I think the men and women that officiate in the NFL are outstanding. They have the highest possible standards. That's a ridiculous theory for anyone who might take it seriously. But at the end of the day, it's something we always have to continue to work on. How do we make our officiating better at all times?
Okay, I think my favorite part of that whole exchange is that the reporter made it very clear to the commissioner as he's asking the question, it's not my theory. It's not what I think. I'm just wondering what you think, Roger.
That sounds like something who does believe it's rigged would say.
Right. True. If you are cynical that way, Ryan, you're too young to be cynical that way. But also, I do think it's significant that he points to social media, because that's really where a lot of this stuff goes viral, if you will, breathes new life through social media. I don't think it's the majority of football fans out there who actually believe the NFL is rigged. And I certainly don't believe the players would ever be on board with it, or the coaches. That's stupid, because A, they stand to lose everything. B, do you not think these teams believe they can beat you just on merit and talent and preparation and coaching? They're not going to jeopardize all of that. Not to mention, in 2025, nobody can keep a secret. So if this was actually the truth, we would know about it. Like, for instance, baseball firing an umpire, Pat Hoberg, because he shared, I'm using my air quotations, a legal sports betting account with a friend who bet on baseball. And there's more, because this ump intentionally deleted messages that were critical or could have been telling in the investigation into his shared betting account. Now, let's just throw the obvious question out there. Why would you ever share a betting account with a friend? That seems like a recipe for disaster. Something along the lines of like an Ipe Mitsuhara. But I also don't think that deleting text messages, it's like Tom Brady with Deflategate, that's the best way to go about it too when you're being investigated for your conduct. So his actions are sus. Isn't that what the cool kids say, Ryan?
Yes, they're very sus.
Would you say that? Would you say they're sus?
100%.
Oh, sweet. I feel so cool. Just but it's a fleeting moment.
I don't get why he deleted messages knowing he didn't bet.
Yeah, if he does adamantly deny betting on baseball directly or indirectly. So why are you deleting messages, and why do you need a shared betting account? Do you not have a debit card or a credit card, or does your friend not have access?
Maybe different states.
Also, do you not know that it's mixing finances and friendships is generally not a good idea?
No, but especially when you're an umpire, like.
Right, or when you're betting.
Yeah, he's just a very weird guy, probably. To be an umpire, you need to be a little weird.
He's just a very weird guy. Probably. That's Ryan's assessment, but we both agree that this is sus. Anyway, his friend is a professional poker player. I have no idea. Again, why would you share a betting account? That seems strange in and of itself. But baseball has fired him. Okay, so back to the point where These days, with the technology, with the tracking, nothing stays secret. If this was actually happening, where someone is paying off the officials or telling them to show favoritism to the Chiefs, eventually it would leak. Because that's too good for someone to keep secret. Somebody out there, and there'd be too many people who would know about it, somebody out there eventually would let it slip, because that's the kind of secret that when you're a kid, it burns a hole in your pocket. Or like, I guess a dollar is the old saying about burns a hole in your pocket. People cannot keep secrets like that. Not everybody. The whole idea is, as Roger Goodell calls it, ridiculous. But the fact that he's addressing it and the reporter clarifies, it's not my theory. Just so you know, in case you were wondering, it's not me. It's After Hours with Amy Lawrence. We'll hear more from the commish coming up, including questions about Tom Brady and whether or not he has a conflict of interest now that he's a minority owner with the Raiders. But the big news coming from the NFL, and we talked about it with Lindsay Rhodes. She's on Radio Row, and we talked about not just the lay of the land there in New Orleans, but the biggest topics. And right now the buzz is still Luka. Even in the NFL, people are buzzing about Luka, including Patrick Mahomes, the Luka Doncic trade that came out of nowhere with no warning, but also Myles Garrett officially requesting a trade from the Cleveland Browns on Monday. Couple of things that jump out to me. Number one, he made it public. So he's putting not only the Browns on notice, but also making it very clear to the rest of the NFL that he's available, or that he should be available, right? So he's not leaving this to the Browns. And I suppose if you watch what's happened with the Browns front office and the decision-making over the last several years, you might want to be careful that it is all done publicly so that they don't try to fleece you. So I understand the Browns front office has not necessarily handled personnel decisions with the most grace. Baker Mayfield comes to mind, the way they blindsided him. Now, they did let him know they were going to look for another quarterback in the draft, going back to the combine before they decided that they would sell their soul to the devil for Deshaun Watson, or just bet the farm on Deshaun Watson, either one of those colloquialisms. But the Deshaun Watson move, the way that they went all in to convince him to go to Cleveland, that drew all kinds of, you want to talk about sus reactions, it drew all kinds of criticism around the league. And so here's Myles Garrett, I think, wanting to be sure that the Browns can't get away with treating him poorly or twisting the story. And he's very complimentary of the fans in Cleveland and the city of Cleveland, but makes it clear that he wants to play for a contender. He wants to compete for a Super Bowl. And how can you fault him that? It's After Hours with Amy Lawrence. And here's the thing. The Browns don't have to trade him. He's got no more guaranteed money on his contract, but he's still under team control for a couple more years. Will they agree to move him somewhere that he can compete? Interesting to hear some of the reaction around the NFL, like insider Mike Garofalo from NFL Network. So this is going back to Monday when the news broke.
My understanding is, despite this statement, the Browns are sticking to their stance and they do not intend to have any conversations or trade Garrett. I was told that this morning in light of that statement that has been released, but Garrett making it clear that he wants out. So we've got ourselves a potential standout here that could last for portions, if not all, of the offseason. We've seen teams before say they don't want to trade players and then wind up doing it. We've seen players say, I want to be traded, and then wind up either re-signing a deal or going back to the team as well. So something eventually is going to give here.
All kinds of people out there on sus social media. Now I'm kind of stuck on it, Ryan. Suggesting ways that Myles Garrett can be moved to this team or that team. We had a caller earlier who said, straight up, Nick Bosa for Myles Garrett. Now, you and I both agree Myles Garrett is a better player. He's more durable, actually played hurt for a lot of this season. Not that Nick misses a ton of games, but sometimes he's playing hurt and it isn't quite as effective. Myles Garrett just marked 100 career sacks this season. He's a game changer. He's a wrecking ball and one of the best defensive players in the league, if not the best. but he is the reigning defensive player of the year, and he's going to be a casualty of this Deshaun Watson deal. If the Browns ownership and the front office did not regret the Watson contract at this point, this is the last piece of evidence you need to indicate that you screwed up royally. Not having your quarterback for the better part of 3 years, I would feel like that's enough to give you buyer's remorse. But this adds insult to Deshaun Watson's myriad of injuries. Miles Garrett wants out. He stuck with you for all this time. He is under contract through the team, with the team through 2026, but he can't stomach it that long. He's in the prime of his career. He's late 20s. The market for him will be hot. And the Browns, they can go out and they can ask for the sun, the moon, the stars. I just think it's really sad. And I've heard from a lot of Cleveland fans, lifetime Cleveland fans, who say you got to give him what he wants. You've got to. He deserves to go somewhere else. You can't keep him here, essentially under lock and key, not allowing him to be part of what is happening this week, right? Not allowing him to pursue his dreams. I think it sucks. It sucks that they bet this farm, as I said, and it blew up in their faces. But they did it against, I would say advice, but I'm not sure they asked for advice. If they had asked for any type of wisdom or counsel or advice, I don't know that there's one other team in the NFL that would have done what they did with Deshaun Watson. Trade for him, yes. Give him that type of guaranteed money when he hadn't played for the better part of 2 years with the lawsuits too. What a mess. And it's not like they're out from under it. You're going to lose Miles Garrett because of that Deshaun Watson deal. That's what it comes down to. And that stinks. It stinks for the Browns fan base. It stinks for Miles Garrett. And whether or not he deserves it, I mean, that's interesting to argue. He has given heart, soul, blood, sweat, and tears to the Browns. 7 consecutive seasons of at least 10 sacks. I'll say this, he's given the Browns the best that he had to offer. Now, will they return the favor and also get something in return? And just as a side note, unless they find a quarterback, and I know they draft high enough to potentially take one of the two, but if you pay attention to draft prognosticators and the analysis of the upcoming draft, the two quarterbacks that are likely to be taken at the top, Shedeur Sanders and Cam Ward, are still projects. They're not ready-made NFL. They're not Jaden Daniels. I'm not saying they can't turn into NFL QBs and maybe even elite QBs, but they're not there yet, which means more than likely you throw them into the fray, and let's just say Cleveland drafts one, don't fix the offensive line, don't trade Miles Garrett, you're going to be in this situation a year from now. There is no get-rich-quick scheme for the Cleveland Browns. It's a miracle that they made the playoffs last year, and that's in large part to Miles Garrett. That defense is what kept them relevant. That and the coaching staff. Kevin Stefanski, Jim Schwartz, Miles Garrett, all award winners a year ago. And then, of course, Joe Flacco, which is my favorite wrinkle. If you don't want free agents to completely shun Cleveland, then you probably need to do right by him because other players are paying attention. Again, though, just business sense. If you don't find a quarterback and if you don't spend money on improving your offensive line specifically, but other parts of the team too, you're going to be in the same situation a year from now. You might as well trade him in the prime of his career and get what you can for him to help you rebuild. It really does stink that Cleveland's fallen into this pit, but the ownership and the front office, they gambled and they lost. At A-Law Radio, what do you think, Browns fans, or just football fans in general? I know there's a lot of people who would take Miles Garrett. It's just what's the right price? Straight ahead, couple of minutes from my conversation with Ron Rivera. Really cool to hear from him again. And he recently interviewed not just for the Bears and the Jets head coaching gigs, but also with the Jaguars for an undisclosed role. I did ask him about it. Good morning to you. It's Tuesday. It's After Hours with Amy Lawrence.
You are listening to the After Hours podcast. This is After Hours with Amy Lawrence.
Had a chance to catch up with longtime NFL coach Ron Rivera as our first guest in anticipation of Super Bowl 59, and such a treat to talk to him. Of course, he played in the Super Bowl with the Bears and won a ring, and has coached twice in the Super Bowl, once as a head coach, once as a coordinator, but most recently with the Panthers going back to the 2015 season. It's After Hours with Amy Lawrence at A-Law Radio. What would you do if you're the Browns when it comes to Myles Garrett? Also on our Facebook page. Wanted to bring back part of Ron Rivera just because he's great. And I asked him what Super Bowl week is like as you prepare for the big game.
You don't realize how much of an event the Super Bowl has become. There are so many things that are pulling people in different directions, and as a coach, you've got so much to worry about, so much to be concerned with, and you got stuff outside of football that you know is distracting for your team, distracting for individual players, and distracting for yourself, that you're trying to keep them focused on what's important and not all this interesting stuff. So it really is a build up to that game, and quite honestly, every time you get on the field, there's a big relief because the only focus now is just the game itself, football.
Especially if they hadn't been to the game before. How do you prepare them?
Well, you try to inform them as whatever could happen. You try to make sure they understand, you know, hey, you're going to be tugged, pulled in one direction, tugged in another direction. People are going to want, you know, they got their hand out. I mean, that was my third Super Bowl. And to be honest, it just gets harder and harder because it's become such a big event, not just nationally, but worldwide now.
I remember going to the game between the Falcons and the Patriots. So this goes back, obviously, a few years, but it was my first one. And what I didn't realize is how different it is inside the stadium versus what you see on TV. How much is happening during every, what we would call commercial breaks, right? But every break and play, someone's getting introduced. There's something happening on the Jumbotron. So even during the game, it's just this incredibly amped up, amplified atmosphere.
It is, and it's created by the people that run it. They understand, in my opinion, what it means to keep them engaged, keep the fans engaged. So they're always trying to find something that can draw their focus and attention on the NFL. Not just necessarily the game, because like you said, every time there's a break, there's an introduction, there's somebody being posted up on the big board, there's something talked about, you know, as far as the NFL is concerned. So it is something that they understand. And they produce it that way because they know the excitement that you know, this is the most watched thing in the world every year.
We're excited to have Ron Rivera back with us here After Hours with Amy Lawrence. When it comes to the coaching part of it, how much do you change going into a game like this where you have a couple of weeks to play with it?
You know, that's one of the things that, you know, we try to be careful with. In the two Super Bowls I went as a coach, one as a coordinator, we try to keep things basic. We try to keep things fundamentally sound the weeks leading up to it, the 2 weeks leading up to it, so that when we got to game time, the stuff that we did work on, the stuff that we did prepare, the guys could handle a lot easier, a lot more naturally. And, you know, for us, it was just really one of those matters of breaks. I mean, we had a guy who didn't fumble all year, fumbled twice in the game. I mean, right. Some things you can't plan for, and unfortunately, you know, usually it's something negative that gets you.
So during the AFC Championship, we saw Patrick Mahomes with a designed run around to the right. It was disguised perfectly. It scores a touchdown from 10 yards out. And members of the Bills defense admitted they had not seen that play on tape. So Andy Reid pulls something out that the Chiefs haven't used all year that the Bills could see. What's your reaction to that?
That's the thing that you look for when you're watching tape. You're looking for, what have we done? What could we get them on that they had not expected? And that's one of the things that, you know, Andy's a master at. If you go back and look at the last two Super Bowls they've won, they've had a play that's been very unique to them that was a scoring play. You know, when they beat Philadelphia, they had the Z receivers coming down in motion. He fakes like he's going up over the top, reverses fields, go back out the other side, and they throw him the touchdown pass. And then when they beat the 49ers, they bring the Z receiver down inside, and when the ball snapped, you see Kelce go straight at the cornerback, and all of a sudden the receiver, he reverses fields, goes back out to the flat for the game winner. So he's always looking for something that's least expected, and I promise you, going through all of his tape, all of his reports, everything, it all points to something that they have, that they will be planned to use at the right moment.
Former coach of the year, longtime NFL head coach Ron Rivera with us here after hours with Amy Lawrence, headed to New Orleans, and we'll talk about that momentarily. I saw the reports about you interviewing with the Bears, even recently with a position on the Jaguars staff. What can you share about the hiring process or this cycle?
Well, we're still going through it. I mean, we'll see how things unfold in the next few days, and you know, maybe something will move one way or the other. But you know, it's been interesting. You know, the opportunity to coach is something that I find interesting and intriguing. So we're just going to kind of go through it and see what happens.
I know the last time I talked to you, you mentioned that you were interested in getting back into coaching, but not so much the management and all the drama that you dealt with the last couple years. So has it been refreshing just to kind of get back in that cycle and see it with new eyes?
It really is. Managing the situation circumstances was very difficult. It really was. People have no understanding of the degree of off-the-field, non-football chaos that I had to deal with. And that, to me, is probably the one thing that bothers me, because I ended up managing as opposed to coaching. And, you know, as a coach, I love everything about the game. The game's been great to me. It's been great to our family. And, you know, as a result, I've been able to fulfill a lot of my desires and dreams as a young person who, you know, looked at the NFL as an opportunity. And I enjoyed the heck out of it. I really do. But the last few years had been very difficult.
Well, we're rooting for you to get back into it when the time is right. But what did you think of the media side of things after a year of working on the desk, so to speak, and on games?
You know, what was very intriguing for me personally was, you know, I did some stuff in studio for the NFL Network, and that, I enjoyed the heck out of it. That was a lot of fun. Good people there. There really are a lot of great people. But I also got the call games for Westwood One and Sports USA Radio.
Yes.
And that was fascinating. I enjoyed the heck out of that because, first of all, you know, being up in the booth and looking down on the game, it's like a 10,000-foot view. You see everything that's going on. I was fortunate. I got to cover, I believe it was 5 Rams games, and watching what Coach McVay does and the way he innovates was really spectacular. It really was cool. It kind of gave me a little bit more of a sense of, you know, of why I love the game so much. Working with the statisticians and the analysts, the analytics guys from the NFL Network gave me a chance to really understand what it meant to dive into the numbers and look to use those numbers to see exactly what's going on. I saw trends. I saw how one coaching staff with a young quarterback and how they worked with him, and he had a spectacular year, where another staff that didn't quite have it going, why they struggled and why there was such a difference between the two of them. When you look at certain numbers, it pointed to, you know, certain things that the Commanders were doing in a really positive fashion that really helped Jaden out. And I'll tell you, that's going to be the reason why Jaden Daniels is the rookie of the year. I mean, offensive rookie of the year, just because of the things that they did offensively.
When you get back into coaching, how do you use analytics like that? How much of a role do they play?
It either reaffirms what you believe in, or it points to what's going wrong. It's not the decision maker for you. It can't be. It's got to be part of it, though. It's got to be a tool that you use to help validate or invalidate what you're trying to do and say, you know what, we need to look at something different. Wow, you know, this is why. I'll give you an example. If you look at the things that the Commanders did, they used play-action pass spectacularly. You go back and look at it to where, you know, Jaden was so good at it, the way their receivers were open, okay? His receiver separation was above league average. I mean, that's telling you that the routes that those guys are running, the way they're running the routes, were really good, and they were giving Jaden, you know, good targets to throw the ball to.
Ron Rivera, you're headed to New Orleans in a different capacity this year, doing some media work, but also you've partnered with USAA for a long time. Why is that so important to you?
Well, the big thing is because it's the Salute to Service, and USAA has been tremendous with their support of the NFL's efforts for Salute to Service and making sure that we pay homage and show our gratitude to our military personnel. And, you know, my father was a retired military, so to me it's very important that we give back to that community of folks.
I've never been to Army Navy in person. What is that like, Coach?
Oh, it's spectacular. These are the young men and women that are serving our country, and for them to be able to come together in a very competitive atmosphere, but at the same time know that they are brothers in arms, okay? These young men and women are the elite young Americans that, you know, we hang our future on, and just knowing those folks are there, it was really neat. It was an honor to be there. It really was, and I had a great time just being around them. I mean, it was a neat thing. It was a lot of fun, and I'd do it again.
I've heard the atmosphere is legendary when you get those stadiums packed, because it's a different type of energy, right? As you point out, it's not just about football.
It isn't, Amy. You know, because there's so much tradition, first of all, that's involved with it. It really is. So everybody that's played for Army, even played for Navy, if they can get there, they're there to show their support. And at the same time, they're there to have a great time and kind of poke fun at each other and salute our nation. They really, truly do. And it's really neat that USAA is a big part of presenting that football game every year.
So we'll see Ron Rivera in New Orleans as part of USAA Salute to Service, which is incredible, but not done with this hiring process. So we look for good things, Coach. You've been so good to us this year. Thank you so much for a few minutes.
No, I appreciate it, Amy, and it's always great to hear you.
In the podcast, you'll hear me talk to him about defending the tush push and why the Bills' attempts did not work, actually. He broke that down without me even teeing him up on it. Good stuff from Ron Rivera. And I really enjoy how he can, on radio or TV, offer you a bite-sized analysis about a play that makes it so clear and easy to understand, and the various options too. Just really good stuff from him. You can understand why he is a great head coach, and I'm rooting for him to get another job, whether it's as a coordinator or again as a head coach. 855-212-4227. What would you do about Myles Garrett? Interesting, some of your reactions online at A-Law Radio, and then our Facebook page too. Good morning to you. Here's our latest sports update.
You are listening to the After Hours Podcast. The Philadelphia Eagles.
Hurts under center on first down. He pitches it out to Barkley. Takes off to the outside. He's at the 50. He's at the 40. He's at the 30. He's going to go. 15, 10, 5. Touchdown. Saquon Barkley. 60 yards on his opening touch.
The Kansas City Chiefs.
First down play. Mahomes keeps it on an RPO at the 5. Gets a lead block. He goes into the end zone near side. Touchdown, Kansas City. Patrick Mahomes, a 16-yard run. His second rushing touchdown of the game.
After Hours tackles the Big Bowl in the Big Easy all week long on the Infinity Sports Network.
The voice god, he's got it going on. The Big Bowl in the Big Easy. See, that big bowl makes me think of a big bowl of guac or a big bowl of mango salsa. I know. It's After Hours with Amy Lawrence. Yeah, it was opening night, if you will, at New Orleans Super Bowl week. They've dressed everything up, so it's all a big production. And the guys have to sit up on podiums, and they've got to answer questions. I don't know if anyone posed the question, the ageless question of, if you were a tree, what kind of tree would you be? I just know that it's another massive event that the NFL tries to make must-see TV. You get closer to your favorite players. Well, Travis Kelce certainly fielding a lot of questions about Taylor Swift. We're not going to use those. But what about this idea that the Chiefs are now the most hated team out there and people root against them?
I don't let outside noise fuel me or motivate me. I have all the motivation right here and with the people that I go to work with and who I show up for. I just try and be the most accountable guy that I can for them.
He did say he wishes Jason Kelce was still playing and that it would be awesome to compete against his brother again. He felt like Jason had at least another year in him, though obviously Travis isn't facing Jason on the field, and that Eagles defense, it's got some teeth.
This is going to be our biggest test yet. They got a lot of great players, but the biggest thing is they play great together. You can see their communication. You can see the accountability that they have, especially in the secondary. It's not going to make my job any easier.
Well, and while we're talking about culture, isn't that what Andy Reid has facilitated and fostered there in Kansas City, incidentally, as the winningest coach for both of these organizations? But you don't hear, well, Patrick Mahomes will rave about Andy Reid whenever he gets the opportunity, but he seemed more thoughtful on Monday night, kind of a little deeper with some of his comments about football as a way to bring people together. And one of the great things about America, he points to football, but also about how Andy Reid has built the Chiefs, not just into a winner, but into more of a family.
The culture that Coach Reid builds, he does a great job of making everybody feel important and maximizing their strengths. And so being able to throw a guy on the football field, and it just kind of fits perfectly. And so the culture that Coach Reid builds kind of really exemplifies our team.
I love that. Again, you don't hear a lot of that from Pat. He stays more business most of the time, but waxing poetic a little bit about Andy Reid. And he obviously has staying power, a very accomplished coach. He'll be a Hall of Famer. But to have this relationship with Patrick Mahomes as the centerpiece of the Chiefs' success right now, it's incredible the way that Pat not only has the visioning and implements a lot of Reid's designs, and I'm sure Pat's involved in it too, but also how their relationship is unique. You have to have one of those. It's maybe not like Belichick and Brady, and yet it's clear the two of them have a relationship that goes far beyond the football field. And to me, that's got to be one of the building blocks of their success. Seeing some of the stats that are thrown at you this time of the year when it comes to Patrick Mahomes, career playoff stats. Chiefs have won 17 games and lost just three when he's the QB. 6,138 total passing yards, or total yards, excuse me. 6,138, that's an entire season plus of yards just in the postseason. 50 total touchdowns, only 8 interceptions, a passer rating of nearly 106. That's just in the playoffs. So I think as much as people might like to hate, quote unquote, the Chiefs, I more think it's sports hate, which is jealousy. If anyone is going to approach Tom Brady as GOAT, quote unquote, it's going to be Pat. And I think a lot of people would like to see someone challenge Brady's supremacy. Oh, and speaking of Brady, you know, he's very busy prepping for this game. He'll be alongside Kevin Burkhardt as the lead analyst on the Super Bowl on Fox. And Roger Goodell was fielding questions about whether or not there's a conflict of interest for Brady now as a broadcaster, but also as a minority owner of the Raiders.
Tom has been incredibly cooperative. He calls frequently about it and says, am I doing okay? And I think
frequently.
He's serious about making sure that he separates these two and he doesn't put the league or anyone in a position of conflict.
Seriously, that sounds not like the Tom Brady that we think about. Of course, he did destroy his cell phone once because there was so much data on it, or at least got rid of that. He calls frequently. Think about how much Roger Goodell was his public enemy number one and how furious he was at Roger Goodell and the NFL for that whole Deflategate/suspension. Now he calls him frequently. All right.
He calls like, is this okay if I talk about Shedeur Sanders on the broadcast?
Yeah, I mean, I could imagine that he's asking about guidelines now and then, but also a conscientious Brady wanting to make sure that he doesn't put either role in jeopardy, and certainly that the Raiders are not in any type of a sticky situation. So I appreciate that. That sounds like the kind of boss or minority owner you'd want on your team. Let's see. Darius Slay not weighing in on Tom Brady, but weighing in on Patrick Mahomes and the challenge of corralling him.
He found ways to get it done. You know, he do a great job not turning the ball over, not forcing nothing. You can see that as everybody felt as when Tyreek left, that is going to be a downfall in his deep ball play action kind of way, but it wasn't. He kept it up there as a notch.
It is kind of, since Tyreek Hill, or I guess between Tyreek Hill and Xavier Worthy, who they're using more as a deep threat, he is stretching the field more, though still a rookie, and they've had to figure out how to use that. They had to establish that connection. But I think that's interesting that Darius would say everybody pretty much thought that that was the end of the downfield strikes, and they haven't had as many. So that's true. One more, A.J. Brown. I don't know if he had inner excellence with him. In fact, I feel like that would be perfect, but if he had it with him on opening night. But he's got 9 catches for 120 yards and a touchdown and has made major steps forward this season.
I'm a completely different football player. I definitely grown off the field as well, but on the field, I'm a whole different person.
I like it. Just because it's the second time in 3 years doesn't mean it's the same Eagles. And Jalen Hurts certainly admitted that he's motivated, lit a fire when they lost a couple years ago. There's more. Of course, we'll highlight Saquon Barkley this week. And actually, we didn't get to it tonight, but I am planning on doing it. It's just hard when you've got so much going on during Super Week. Some of the leftover, would you call them intel? We'll call it intel information from maybe just interviews from Pro Bowl festivities, like including Jared Goff and talk about the loss to the Commanders and all that stuff. So we do have more time this week. All right, quickly, working this in, our Defensive Player of the Week is sponsored by the Navy Federal Credit Union, who proudly serves the Armed Forces DOD. Veterans and their families, members are the mission. Learn more at NavyFederal.org. Dyson Daniels of the Atlanta Hawks, in their win over the Pistons, 4 steals, 3 blocks, and the third-year guard now averaging 3 steals per game, leading the NBA. How about that? It's After Hours with Amy Lawrence. Boom!